How could the FX Hulu show The Bear improve upon what it did in its first season? And does the Disney Plus show Secret Invasion actually get it right this time?
An elevator tape projection.
Hello, thanks for tuning in to Taking It Down, the TV and streaming podcast from the Alabama Take, where we prompt conversations for thoughtful, busy TV devotees, all from us, your irreverent outsiders. I'm Blaine Duncan, I'm the editor-in-chief of the Alabama Take. I always could not help dissecting why I like what I like and why I dislike what I dislike when it comes to TV, movies, and more. I have an English degree and a side hustle as an English teacher, so I'll try my best to offer insight that you can use for conversation with others or even with us or even just to think about. Luckily, my ideas aren't the only set of viewpoints on this podcast each week, as with me are the other hosts, Adam Morrows, an erudite traveling and studio musician with a penchant for fine literature. Donovan Reinwald is a media specialist with encyclopedic knowledge on film, television, and more. And Natalie Morrow, she's the first person to ask about fantasy, sci-fi, comics, trashy reality TV, and she's a huge Beyoncé fan. From us, you'll get the obvious, but you'll get the obscure. We are here for the TV and streaming obsessed who are just too busy for anything more than the show or movie itself. We'll give the outside of Hollywood analysis, and like a lot of the Alabama Take productions, it'll come with zero Southern stereotype. Hello to our podcast listeners. If you don't watch the YouTube, the video version, we do a little extra things there if you want to watch it. We dole out Listener of the Week, but this is our official start. I think I speak for all of our chefs here when I say we're all pumped to have The Bear back on Hulu. In case you don't follow, we are actually not talking about the late aughts band from Florence, Alabama.
Unfortunately.
Nor the legendary, above all legendary, Alabama coaches. This is the Chicago-based series, The Bear, starring Jeremy Allen White, primarily. Great supporting cast. Came out of nowhere last summer, seems like. Captivated everyone, probably because of its pacing, intensity, heart. Anyway, it's back for its second season just a year later, as of Thursday. If you haven't watched it, you should. It's high quality. I think all of us recommend it who have seen it. We're going to analyze it, tell you why and how it's working so well, but we're going to do it with spoilers. So season two, at least, what, two episodes, three episodes spoiled? How many are we going?
We can go five. We've watched up to the fifth.
Whoa,
so
I've done three. I've done three.
Perfect.
We'll go three deep. Spoilers, season two, three deep. Don't listen if you're not that far, okay? Okay, so did this show release all its episodes in the same day last year?
Yes.
Did it really?
I'm pretty sure it did.
Well.
Adam disagrees.
I don't think it did.
I can't.
And we still haven't Googled it.
Donovan, do you mind looking that up?
Let me see if I can find it.
Thanks, Donovan. The reason why I ask is I remember we let them pile up, but I couldn't remember if we let them pile up because we just were behind the ball. We were behind everyone else watching it. I feel like that's what we were.
I think we were behind.
I can tell you exactly what happened, though. Adam hurt his back working at Kodachrome Gardens, the garden he runs. Plug.
That's not how I heard it. I heard it being old.
Well, come on, man.
I had to sleep on a floor after a show.
Oh.
And woke up all discombobulated.
Well, you hurt your
back. But yeah, otherwise, you're right. The circumstances are accurate.
You hurt your back, and you were taking a day off from working Kodachrome or taking it easy, and you caught up on The Bear. And I thought we had just let a few episodes pile up, you and I and Natalie.
I think it was both.
I think, so my main introduction to it is people talking about it at the Garden. Like people who work in kitchens that had come out to volunteer for the night, and they were talking about that week's episode.
Exactly.
So either they were just watching it live and doing it that way, mm-hmm. or it was released one at a time. Donovan has an answer.
So according to Wikipedia, all of the first season was released on the same day, June 23rd, 2022.
And almost a year to the day.
Yeah.
So that makes a little bit more sense. Still feels like a misstep to me. If you're Hulu, if you're Disney Plus, if you're anyone but Netflix, it doesn't make sense to do some this way and some that way. I feel like there needs to be a consistency to your release method. Netflix, you know, that's their bread and butter. release it all on one day. Okay, fine. Well, we know that. We know that's going to happen. So it doesn't bother me when they do it because they've always done it that way. But yes, I go, okay, so the Bear did it its first season. There's, okay, it's consistent. Adam watched them with a bad back last season. We love season one. Did season one, it got a little bit of flack amongst friends and some message boards for that nice little pat ending. And we discussed it last year on this show, on this podcast. Did the first episode of the second season really make up for that for you? Because I was thinking, wow, they did. They were able to still be in trouble even though they just got a bunch of money. And it was a very logical way of being in financial dire straits once again. Did that also feel too pat for you, or what'd you think?
You know, watching, it's been almost a year since we saw it, and I had the thought of like, wait, didn't they just find all this money? Isn't life supposed to be good? So I still don't, I mean, the circumstances of a show like this drive a plot, and the plot is not the most interesting thing to me. You know what I mean? Like, as they get into, like, we have to build this out, and you know they're going to face problems with licenses and building problems and all this kind of stuff. Like, none of that really matters that much, because we're interested in the characters and how they respond to these things. So the fact that they had money and then needed more money, it's like, this is a plot device to me. It doesn't really bother me. I guess I understand why people were annoyed that they found a small fortune at the end of last season and tied it back to the brother, but I don't know.
Just seemed really convenient. Like, all the problems were solved in the last minute with some weird sauce hidden money.
So I didn't see it that way at all.
So. You didn't?
Yeah.
I was fine with it personally watching it. I was like, oh, okay, well, great. There's your ending. Wonderful. But then I started texting with friends and a few people.
But it wasn't like they were finding just extra money. They were finding the money. Like, the issue in the first season was that the uncle or whoever it was that loaned him the money wanted his money back. He wanted to start repaying on this loan. All they found was that money. So they're still at zero, essentially.
That's right. And that's what season two, episode one, makes clear right at the very beginning. And their problems, I feel like, were very understandable. Like, if I went out and won $100,000 today, that's going to take care of some things, but it ain't going to take care of everything. I'm still going to have to pay for blah, 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 taxes on that money if I want it. And, you know, there's all kinds of things that, or, you know, if my wife and I decide to build a back porch, we have to get, you know, building certain licenses and building or go through zoning or whatever. I was just curious what y'all thought that. We did discuss that a little bit at the end of The Bear. We covered The Bear quite a lot, one of our favorites from last year. There is a line in episode two from Carm. He says, my brain does this weird thing where it bypasses any sense of joy and attaches itself to dread. Y'all, that's me. Could anyone else relate to that line?
Yeah, there are, I think when they're trying to, and I guess a big part of it is them trying to understand why they keep doing what they're doing.
It's an addict's mentality. And it's funny that Carm said it, because he's not the addict in the family, at least not that we know of. It was his brother. He is going to Al-Anon meeting. Beautiful scenes with him in those Al-Anon meetings.
Well, and we've never seen him drink, right?
That's a good question. He might have had a beer here or there, but I don't think so, no.
I don't think he drinks at all. And I don't know if that's
because preventative, of his brother.
Right, or if it's due to a past problem. But I think the addict mentality in all of them comes out in them just being completely dedicated to this crazy idea. You know, it almost reminds me of like musicians. Like, well, all we have to do is sink all this money into this thing that's crazy and requires you to work crazy hours, and like, maybe at bare minimum we can just scrape by.
Yeah.
And then you're like, why are we doing this? That felt very relatable.
That line punched me in the gut, because that's why I can't drink, because I'll do this thing where I'll drink and the one beer brings me joy, but I immediately feel, oh God, this feeling's going to wear off. I better hurry up and grab another one. And then I do the second one, and I'll think, oh God, now I feel great, but this feeling's going to wear off. I better go grab another one. And it's just, my brain will not just enjoy the moment. My brain won't stay in the moment. I just love that line. It felt well written. It felt like someone who had a sense of an addict or Al-Anon. So it felt true. And it brings me to my next point, which Man, these characters are so human. We can bring up Marcus. The opening shot of this season is Marcus with his mother. That shot did a few things without saying anything. I think it made sure to say that his mom is at her house, right? He's caring for her at home. That was not a hospital room, was it?
Right.
Good. I'm glad I interpreted that correctly.
Well, they did leave it a little open-ended, but it is confirmed later to be...
Oh, is it?
The home. And I think there's a scene that intentionally... But no, that's not really a spoiler, hopefully. But there's a scene that very gently confirms... I think they leave it open-ended on purpose to then quietly address it later.
It just stood static on him sitting there for a while. And I was like, why is it doing this? Maybe it's because I'm supposed to interpret the setting. And I was like, those are not blinds you would find in most hospitals. Marcus is very human. All of these are so human. Tina... And her, the guy who goes to culinary school with her, I can't think of his name, Elbry something, you know, them feeling, especially him, feeling like he's got imposter syndrome at the school. I could relate to that. Like if you told me, hey, we'll send you to podcasting school, I would jump at the chance. And when I got there, I would just be like, I'm not going to say anything. I'm an imposter.
I mean, my favorite thing about this show as a whole is just how it is high energy. It is, in the story, high stress, but I never feel stressed watching it. Like, I really don't like to watch programs that make me feel anxious. And this one somehow doesn't, even though by all accounts it absolutely should. Something about the way that it's shot and the way that it's... There's always just like, you know, they'll be in a high stress situation and then there's just a scene of a train going by. You know, through Chicago. I'm like, okay, I'm good. I'm safe here. I can continue. I can binge watch this and not come out of it sweaty and nervous. I do.
What is a show that makes you sweaty and nervous? I'm just curious.
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
Does The Challenge make you sweaty and nervous? Do you like?
No, because that's just silly. That's okay. Too much fun.
I just wonder because in the eliminations, if like CT's in elimination, I'm like, please don't go home. Please don't go home. I'm on the edge.
There have been some shows that we've talked about where Adam will, like, he'll tell other people, oh, Natalie doesn't like that. It makes her too nervous. I'm like, you're right. It does. I don't love it.
He has mentioned that.
Yeah, but this doesn't do it. I don't know how or why. I don't love, what's his name?
Cousin.
When he starts screaming and there's just screaming happening, like I kind of need to leave the room for a second. But there's been a lot less of that this season, which has been pretty great.
And he's connecting with his daughter, right? He's trying his best to be a dad again, sort of.
This show does a thing that I would say Always Sunny walked so that this could run, but it's still somehow the opposite. Always Sunny ran full speed so that this show could walk. It feels very much like those kind of closed environment conversations that just get completely out of hand where everybody's talking. But they do, both shows do such a good job of like, somehow you can kind of let your ear pick and choose bits from everybody to understand the whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
There's been multiple moments where I'm curious what the direction was for a scene. How do you create that like sound collage effect that does the thing where you feel like you're in a room, but it can't be full on?
Yeah, it's a good point.
It's very Robert Altman, isn't it? Like the overlapping conversations. Like, how do you direct for that?
Do people actually talk that way to each other? Like, is this an actual way? I don't know if it's just because we're in the South and people don't tend to shout over one another constantly. But is this a real thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Wild.
In my classroom it is.
Well, sure. But like with adults, like properly formed, full-brained adults.
These are not properly formed adults.
Well. I think that's the point. Yeah, but no, I think it does happen some, but you're right. But Natalie, you brought up those shots of Chicago where the train going by. Are those shots even better this season, that B-roll footage?
Yeah.
Man, it's like...
Somehow.
Also, they're doing something that I think is different. You guys can correct me. Listeners can write me and tell me if I'm wrong. Are they doing more close-ups? It's almost as if we're more comfortable with our characters. You're more comfortable with who they are. Let's put the camera here. Here being very close to their face. I love that. I think that's a smart move.
Have you met Claire yet?
Mm-hmm. I was about to bring her up.
Claire is someone that from the outset, they frame her very close.
Yes, immediately.
An interesting choice. Like, almost telling you, like, this is a... intimate may imply the wrong thing, given where that relationship seems to be going. But, like, they have a long-standing connection. They know each other's past level of intimate, kind of.
Certain intimacy there.
This is, like, an avenue into his backstory that you wouldn't get otherwise.
All right, so here's my question to you, and it might get answered. So if it does get answered, don't bother with it. Does he give her the wrong number because his life's too hectic? He's still dealing with grief, or he's got a thing for Sydney?
No comment.
Okay. But thank you. Because she does, in episode 3, she does end up reaching out to him because she figured out he gave her the wrong number. And they kind of work through that a little bit. And Sydney's left alone to scour Chicago restaurants and pick apart what they're doing right.
That also kind of... Carmi is shown as being the guy who had it together and left and went and did all this stuff.
Yeah.
And when he kind of blows her off for the day just to go out with hang out with a girl.
Right.
It's kind of like, oh, there's some of that family chaos factor in there.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't like a pure type A kind of guy.
Yep. This show's doing what really great shows can do with a second season. That's take some of those characters and put them somewhere else. They don't have to be in their restaurant anymore. Take them beyond the borders of that. You know, Tina going to the school. I talked about how she and really the guy that goes with her feel like imposters now. There's this really good article in the New York Times by Chris Wagner on how this is just a show about grief. He really frames his entire opinion piece about that. And, you know, when you're reading it, you'll just nod along because his point is that it makes a more true statement about grief than any other show about grief tries to do, because that's the way it is. It's hectic. It's a headache. You know, it'll make you angry and those kinds of things. Have you seen that piece on the New York Times? I think it was on Thursday or Friday.
I haven't yet, no.
Pretty short read, but still really great. I recommend people read it. It's getting rave reviews, as if to say... critics may seem to think that this is even better than the first season.
It's interesting that they seem to leave it season one in a place where it could have ended if it had had to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got a new one within a year. That's pretty remarkable. I wonder if the production timeline kind of mirrored them rushing to get the restaurant together.
Had to have. And they haven't dropped in quality at least 3 episodes for me.
Right.
Let's go into our break. Quick break. And we're going to come back with a little bit on Secret Invasion. Not only is there WWE and AEW, but the South is full of great indie wrestling. Who do you want analyzing what you've watched or covering what you missed? Superfan Corey Hanna and former indie wrestler Patrick Akers give you the news and the takeaways every Friday morning on Alabama Slam. Find it on thealabamatake.com or in any podcast app. Search Alabama Slam. We're back. We've got Donovan with us still, of course. We got Natalie with us still, of course. So this past week, we got the debut of the new MCU show on Disney Plus called Secret Invasion. Revolves around Nick Fury. He has returned to Earth to halt a plot for control of Earth from a faction of Skrulls who... they're not too nice about getting what they want. The first episode had Ben Mendelsohn, Kobe Smulders, Emilia Clarke, Kingsley Ben-Adir. We're going to spoil the first episode. There's only the one. If you're listening to us on Tuesday, there'll be another one, I think, tomorrow. Secret Invasion. Initial thoughts? Donovan, what did you think about it?
My initial review of it is it should be subtitled, "I'm glad everyone is getting one."
Same.
That's pretty good.
So I do think they assembled a really great cast and like sort of have an intriguing premise. Although I do kind of wonder if Disney had HQ, they were not like, do we really want to portray refugees as trying to take over everything? I don't know how that one got. It's an interesting choice, but.
Wow. That's an interesting lens to view this.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought of it, but that's a good point.
And everyone's doing a good job. Mm-hmm. I just think And I probably will. I kind of want to see what happens and where it goes. But it, yeah. it's a little too serious. It's a little too, real, you know, like they dropped Saber and I'm like, did I miss something? You know, I had no idea what Nick Fury's been doing despite the many cameos.
That was mentioned fairly briefly at the end of one of the Spider-Man movies.
Yes. He's up there. And it asks a lot of Samuel L. Jackson that I'm not sure he's willing to give at this point in his
career. That's the thing. See, that's the thing. I don't want to step on Natalie's toes here, so I'll just briefly say that's why I think I might like it. Because, okay. You know, he can do good stuff.
He can.
He hasn't really in the MCU.
I was going to say, I didn't see that in this first episode.
Okay.
I didn't see anything super different from what he's done so far. I'd like to see more. I'd like to see different.
But I think on that, they're kind of portraying the character. They keep talking about in the show, you're out of your league now. The world has changed. This isn't, you're not going to be able to do what you used to be able to do. So it'll be interesting to see. It sounds like they're going to make him do some different stuff, potentially. I mean, mm-hmm. Granted, this is Marvel, so probably not. But the potential is there. Maybe you're just falling for it. He's going to
do spy stuff. Maybe I am.
Forgive me. I'm looking up something he did recently because I thought he did a really good job in it. It's something I watched. I don't think any of you guys watched it. It was some of his best work recently. The Last Days of Ptolemy Gray on mm-hmm. Apple. Yeah, he played an old man who was beginning to get dementia.
Interesting.
Based off a book. And he did work. He did work in that series. He was in every scene, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Carried it, of course. Hey, you know, the man can act. Mm-hmm. You just don't see it anymore because everybody's gotten so used to him saying, motherfucker, and he's the guy from Snakes on a Plane. He's gonna drop a cursing on somebody. He's from Pulp Fiction. And in Pulp Fiction, he was a fantastic actor. You forget how good his acting is because he was so humorous and fun to watch.
You forgot to mention Star Wars.
That's right. But he was kind of doing his MCU. I don't know. That's a good question. Which one was he better in as an actor, MCU or Star Wars?
You know, they're a little different because in Star Wars, he's graver. He's trying to be more responsible. And what is he? He gets thrown out a window, right? So that's not a great end. But you know, he gets to be a little bit closer to Pulp Fiction in the MCU.
A little bit. Yeah, you get a hint of that in this first episode where he's questioning and he's like, he says something along the lines of, he uses the word ass, you know.
Yes.
And he uses, but it's, you get a glimpse of that Pulp Fiction character in that scene of, because he's questioning, I think he's with Olivia Colman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What a delight to see her in anything.
Yeah, she was fun.
Yeah.
She looked like she was kind of just having a good time.
I think she may have been.
That's cool. I was impressed with the directing. Felt much more patient than previous MCU shows. I would put it on par with Moon Knight.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I keep comparing it to She-Hulk because that was one of my least favorite series in a while, as far as MCU is concerned. We're going to have a big attempt to play up Samuel L. Jackson's I'm too old for this shit moment, right?
Yeah, it's going to be great.
But that seems... I know, exactly. That's my thing. I think it seems fair and earned. Like, he's been Nick Fury for, 2008?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 15 years.
Do you think he put that in his contract? Like, when they asked him to come do the show, he's like, I'm too old for this shit. I'm like, perfect, we'll write it in.
That's it. That's what we want. I mean, they're playing it up a lot. They really hammer you with it. Like, he's rubbing his knee when he gets off the spaceship. He mentions it a couple times. Some of his compadres say it flat out.
I mean, can you imagine people that have, like, achy joints when it's just going to rain? You just came back from space. That's a whole different atmosphere.
It's good. I mean, I think it's a good point.
It's a dumb point.
Giving Nick Fury his own show, I think that's in the making. I think that was. I think it could be well done if they do it right. And I thought that the first episode was slow,
mm-hmm.
but in a good way. I thought it was slow. That's going to force people who love MCU to be like, just just pump the brakes, just settle into this for a moment.
It was slow. It's slow in the way that everything else should be. You know, I think we've complained in the past about there's no preamble to the story. We're just jumping into action all the time, and it's exhausting and doesn't make a lot of sense. There's no investment. Whereas now, this is what it should be. Give us some background, give us a reason to care, and then pick up the action.
I think that's it. It still had its cake and ate it too, because that first scene with Martin Freeman, that's pretty action-packed.
Yeah.
You know, you were like, oh God, what's about to happen?
Yeah, it's exciting. You know,
that was actually screaming at the wall like Charlie from It's Always Sunny.
That's all I could think of too. Like, he actually had the lines and everything. That's all I could think of the whole time.
Yeah, but it was fun. It could get old. It could get too tricky for its own good. But I do find it intriguing on who's a Skrull, who isn't. Spoilers, obviously, but when Agent Hill gets shot, I question if that was Nick Fury figuring out she was a Skrull, which had me interested in how did he know she was a Skrull.
Me too. I was on the exact same train of thought. Which was kind of fun, right?
But, you know, instantly you figure out that it was a Skrull posing as Nick Fury to get her attention and then shoot her.
Would it have been better had it been Nick Fury thinking it was a Skrull, getting it wrong, but still shooting her?
Mm-hmm. You got to think that something like that's going to happen. But they're playing with our expectations there, little one. Smartly so. Did this one, so far, we're going to get this wrong. We always do because we only get one episode at a time like everyone else. But this one feels like it's written by one person.
I don't feel like I have enough other episodes to go off of.
Like, if they're really playing with our expectation, that feels like some one person guiding it instead of 15 others.
Mm-hmm.
That rebellious Skrull leader is played by Kingsley Ben-Adir. That guy's got presence. I've seen him play the charming, handsome boyfriend on High Fidelity on Hulu. But here he didn't have but a few words, and he was still kind of menacing. And he came off as an asshole in just a few scenes.
Yes, he did.
So having him versus Ben Mendelsohn and Samuel L. Jackson looks like it's going to work. You got Emilia Clarke playing Ben Mendelsohn's daughter. Didn't know that's what she was going to be playing, did you?
Mm-mm.
That was a fun little twist. I guess it's not really a twist, but a little surprise in the middle of the episode.
That was, a surprise because, boy, it really puts him in his eye. He can't just straight up shoot her, you know, or tackle her or beat her up or anything. So, yeah.
I've not seen a lot of stuff with Ben Mendelsohn. I actually really enjoyed seeing him in this episode, although his accent is so thick that I had to turn on subtitles.
His Australian accent's as thick as it gets.
Yes, it is. But I thought he was good, right? Like, he had, I think part of it is like, what impresses me is like you're in the silly space superhero story and you have to act like this is real. And like the, mm-hmm. when he, you know, confronts his daughter and everything, it's like, okay, you're selling this to me. I get it.
Listeners probably aren't as stupid as I am, but
it's a high bar.
I will watch the show. What'd you say?
You're setting a high bar there, buddy.
But I will watch these shows, and just like you said, Donovan, I'll be sitting there thinking, he's got to act serious even though he's talking about alien stuff. Is he going to nail it? How serious can he take it? And you're right. Ben Mendelsohn's a pro.
That's his job. Is. He better be able to do it. You know how much money he's getting paid to act like it's real?
But some you do have an occasional person who waltzes in there and just says the lines, and you don't feel it.
Granted, maybe it's the accent. Minor.
Maybe it's the accent. Well, Ben Mendelsohn, he's got it. Donovan, you remember him from Rogue One, though, right?
That's true. He was good in that. I forgot that he was in that. Yeah.
Well, he was in HBO's The Outsider.
Which I haven't seen that one.
Fantastic. They're also playing up Nick Fury being really bothered by the blip. And that, too, makes sense. You know, that would hinder people. That would bother people. That would ruin your life in a lot of ways. I feel like they're going to have to give me a little bit more rather than just keep saying it, though. Like, I got to know, like, what exactly about the blip for him personally has given him PTSD.
I guess part of it, you know, the other characters come out, you know, it's not, It's really a tell don't show moment, but some of the other characters come right out and say it's because you couldn't see this coming and you couldn't stop it. Which sort of makes sense, but I do wonder if they're going to dig a little bit deeper, if there's more there.
It seemed as if it was hinting that he's upset about somebody's death.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be Tony Stark. That could be Black Widow. It could be both. Do y'all have a sense of who that is, or are they? Do you feel like they're going to tell you, or are they just going to leave it open like that?
I kind of just hope it's how do you cope with the mental knowledge that you disappeared for 5 years? Like, can it just be that? Like, that trauma of, what the hell?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's serious. It would be funny if they showed them all at a party in one scene. Like, this was the blip. We were actually partying, and we feel so guilty. It's like 5 years of partying and orgy.
Which, again, could it be traumatic? Something he needs to work through.
Got to work through this shit. It's corny, but I like the line of, what'd you get for your birthday? And he said, the Avengers. That's corny, but that's nice.
I thought they made a somewhat daring race joke for a Disney show, too. Oh. I was a little surprised that got in there.
Tell me, did it slide by me? What was it?
Yeah, Fury says, you know, something like, about being in Moscow. He's like, you know, like an old spook like me. And Colby Smulder says, you can't say that. And he goes, no, you can't say that.
Oh, yeah. That.
I was a little surprised, honestly.
Well, that 100% felt like Samuel L. Jackson. I would not be surprised.
Yes, it did.
I wouldn't be surprised if somebody told me, no, he improv'd that and they went ahead and wrote it in. I've seen him in an interview where the journalist asked him something about the N-word, and Samuel L. Jackson kept going back and forth with him saying, what word? No, say it. No, say it, say it. If you want me to talk about it, say it. And the guy was like, I'm not saying that, no. And then Samuel L. Jackson was having fun with him. You know, he didn't have to have fun with him about that, but what did you make of the intro? This is tangential, but is there anything you want to say about it? Because I have a note on it.
We got to fire AI right now. It's getting too exhausting.
It was AI generated. That's right. Did you know that?
Yeah. I mean, I suspected it looking at it and then read it afterwards.
What made you figure it out? Because I didn't.
I don't know. It kind of didn't feel human.
Huh. I remember watching it and thinking, oh, this is a kind of a cool intro. It's got a nice color motif going for the show, matching the scrolls and all. And then I read that it was AI, and I was like, oh, dang, they got me. Computers, you did it again. I'm going to be really interested week to week. We might check in just a little bit, even if just a short sentence, or do it in the YouTube intro, where because Natalie's our MCU expert, our MCU person. She's the first person I'd go to talk some MCU stuff, so really going to be interested in how she takes it in. Do you feel like it's going to be good? Is your prediction that this is going to be pretty good or not?
I think it's going to be better than the other spy TV show. The one that I can't... Winter Soldier Super Spy. I think it's going to be better than like the last three movies that we got.
Not counting Guardians, because none of us have
right,
seen
sure. I think it'll be fun. But it's honestly, it's still too early to say. I mean, they could easily jump the shark next episode.
It felt a lot like the Falcon and Winter Soldier, but better.
Yeah, it feels a lot like, you know, we know that show got thrown off by pandemic stuff. Mm-hmm. This feels like maybe more of what they intended that show to be, and then they had to scrap it halfway through.
We've got more MCU shows than maybe we realize. We've gotten Falcon and Winter Soldier, WandaVision, She-Hulk, Moon Knight, Hawkeye.
Loki. Werewolf by Night? Was that what the one was called?
Oh, I forgot. I never watched
it.
Yeah, I forgot.
And I never watched it. Did you like it?
It was fun. I liked it.
Was it kind of Halloween themed or something?
Not really, but maybe a little bit. I could see how people would say that.
I guess Loki was probably the best of the bunch so far, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be sure. Loki or WandaVision.
Mm-hmm. That's true. WandaVision was pretty good. Although yeah, I did love everything Moon Knight did up until the last episode or two.
But yeah.
I think I would agree with that.
And it dipped in quality quite a bit at the very end.
Especially, I hate, still mad about the reveal at the end, right? Where he's like, huh, it's my other personality. It's like, all right.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Right. You knew that's what was going to happen.
I know. It just wasn't, yeah. Anyway. That's neither here
nor there.
Oh,
you're right. I don't disagree. Well, that's the end of our episode. We've had a lot of fun. This was a really good episode, I felt like. And we hope you enjoy it. We have 160-something episodes. If there's something we covered that you've watched recently, go back and listen and see if you agree or not. Leave us a review on Apple or any podcast app would be great. Just say something you liked about the episode. Say how much you love Natalie. Do that.
It's going to be a lot.
It's going to be a lot. You'll have paragraphs to write. Trust us. Okay. Goodbye to everybody. Goodbye to my host. Great time. See everybody later.